thank you for your word. Thank you that it is so relevant for today. And I pray, God, that you would use your word this morning to speak into your lives, into your hearts, deep, deep, deep in the very center of who we are. And I pray that your word would resonate with us today, would impact us, not just for today, but for the rest of our lives. So bless us and mold us, make us and shape us into who it is that you have designed and created and destined for us to be. And we ask these things in your holy and precious name. Amen. So if you go to Matthew chapter 5, and we'll start at verse 1, and we're only going to read up to verse 3. But it says, "Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So the multitudes have come, the crowds have come, and his disciples come to him." So there's a crowd of people. And then the first thing he says, it's the first of the Beatitudes as we know them, and he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Blessed are the poor in spirit. What does it mean when it says blessed? When something is blessed, it's lifted up, it's venerated, it's exonerated, it's lifted up high. Exonerated is the wrong word, isn't it? It's lifted up high. It's glorified. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Ask the question that I'm sure is at the forefront of your mind right now is, well, who are the poor in spirit? What does poor in spirit mean? Now, we've looked at this in the past, but there's a real, real important reason why we look at it again today. Is there anybody here who either is or has been broken? And there's people here who are broken now, and you might think, oh, is it that obvious? No, but we're broken, and we're at different levels of brokenness. Is there anybody here who's ever felt that they're worthless, they're unworthy, that they'll never ever accomplish that which they believe God has called them to do? Is there anybody here who's never felt good about themselves? Is there anybody here who's struggled with self-worth, self-esteem? Is there anybody here who's felt as if they're a failure? Just to address that point, you're not a failure. Failure is a moment. You might fail at something, but that doesn't define you, and I need to make that abundantly clear to you this morning. You are not a failure. Every one of us in this room has failed at something, but that does not define you, and that does not shape you for the rest of your life. How many times have you felt that you're the worst of the worst, that you're the lowest of the low, that you're the black sheep, that you just won't amount to anything? But let's look at what poor in spirit is not, okay? Does it mean owning nothing? No. It's not necessary to be poor in goods to be poor in spirit. You can have everything that the world can offer and be poor in spirit. Poor in spirit is not an attitude of how we attach ourselves to property. whole lot of nice things. You can be way ahead of the Joneses and still be poor in spirit. Does it mean that we don't need to take care of ourselves? Absolutely not. With anything that we have, we are called to be good stewards, considering how it should be properly used to take care of and serve ourselves and others, and obviously God. Does being poor in spirit mean ignoring our particular talents? Absolutely not. Our talents are gifts from God, given to be used wisely. He gave them to us for a reason. One, it makes us look good, but ultimately it makes Him look even greater. And that is the point with that. We're called to use those talents to take care of ourselves and to serve other people. Being poor in spirit, does that mean that we need to degrade ourselves? There's always an element of self-deprecation. And if you watch comedians, they do it all the time. But they do that essentially for laughs. And they do it so not to appear boastful. But some of them do it better than others, because some of them still come across quite arrogant sometimes. But people, when they're speaking, are usually self-deprecating to an extent, but then you can take it too far, and then you start putting yourself down, and that becomes really bad. What we're meant to do is we're meant to humbly acknowledge God as the source of all of our blessings and use them wisely. He gave them to you. We're not to abuse ourselves or consider our blessings a curse or a sign of our sinfulness. Does it mean living without luxuries? No. We're encouraged to have some things in our life as long as we keep them in proper perspective and don't allow the desire to have more and more, keeping us from serving God and His people. It's okay to have nice things. I like gadgets. Malcolm likes gadgets. Gadgets are alright. As long as they don't come before God, you don't start to worship your iPad. If you start doing that, that's sad. But people do worship things. People worship money. People worship food. People worship a whole load of things. We're allowed to have good things as long as they don't prevent us from worshipping and serving God and His people. Does it mean having a poor spiritual life? No. We are called to deeply develop our spirituality as we become closer to God. So what does it mean to be poor in spirit? The Greek word for poor literally carries the nuance of extreme poverty. So therefore, that's not what it means. No, in this case. And it's derived from a verb that means to crouch or to cower. As if, do you know, you're pulling away from everything because you recognise the lack that you have. And when it says literally poor, it means a continuous state where you're poor and destitute. But then you're thinking, well, John, you're just contradicting yourself, because you just said that it's not about lacking luxuries and various things. But we're not finished yet. This is us just warming up. In Psalm 69 verse 32 it says, the poor will see and be glad. You who seek God, may your hearts live. There's a really, really good clue in this verse. The poor will see and be glad. You who seek God, may your hearts live. Isaiah 61 verse 1 is another good verse. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. So is Jesus called to preach to the people who don't have anything? No. Is he called just to preach to the people who are, in the eyes of society, destitute? Absolutely not. The first beatitude declares the blessedness of those who are poor in spirit. But then it still remains, what does it mean to be poor in spirit? In a Hebrew manner of speaking, the poor were not simply the economically disadvantaged, but those who were in need had turned to God for help. So this is not about economically disadvantaged people. It does include those, but it's not solely for those people. But those who in their need have turned to God for help. The promise to people that accept their absolute dependence on God is that the kingdom of heaven belongs to them. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Those people have entered into God's triumphal reign, established by the redemptive work of Christ, and to be fully realized when he returns at the end of the age. That's what it means. That's part of what it means to be poor in spirit. The NIV Study Bible has poor in spirit as in contrast to the spiritually proud and self-sufficient. Are you spiritually proud? Are you spiritually self-sufficient? Can you sustain yourself spiritually for the rest of your days? Not a chance. But God can. Are you spiritually proud? Are you spiritually arrogant? Do you think that you're better than everybody else when it comes to your level of spirituality? Knowing me the way that I do, I would say absolutely no. That is not the case. In Isaiah 57:15, it says, "For this is what the high and lofty one says, he who lives forever, whose name is holy. I live in a high and holy place, but also with him who is contrite and lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly and to revive the heart of the contrite." Poor in spirit absolutely clashes. It's a cataclysmic collision with the worldly values of pride and personal independence. If you think you're better than everyone else, if you think that you can do this on your own, you know the whole saying, John, no man is an island unless his name is Madagascar. You cannot do it on your own. You cannot do it yourself. Being personally independent is not going to help you get there or arrive. There are a whole raft of self-help books. Chicken Soup for the Soul and a whole range of what those are. They're self-help books. Are they going to help you get there? They might help you get to the cupboard where the chicken soup is, but they're not going to get you to glory with the Lord. Are you a saviour of yourself? Or is Jesus your saviour? And our reward is the kingdom of heaven. In James 4:7-10, it says, submit yourselves then to God, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. Do you want to be lifted up? I don't want to be glorified. I don't want my name to be lifted higher than anybody else's. But there's a promise here that we can be lifted up. But to be lifted up, we need to humble ourselves before the Lord. And so in Jesus' longest recorded sermon, the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, or the Sermon on the Plain in Luke, Jesus began by describing the traits that he was looking for in his followers. He called those who developed those traits blessed because God had something special in store for them. So when it says poor in spirit, it's no talking about material possessions. The emphasis is on piety, suffering, dependence on God, not material poverty. And in later Jewish writings, the poor continues to denote the faithful and persecuted people of God, whom he will ultimately vindicate. And to have that humble, unworldly attitude, which puts its trust only in God, is the true mark of a disciple. The kingdom of God belongs to such as these. They are God's people. Poor in spirit. It's not a condition of merit, recognizes that in spite of and in the midst of their ever so deplorable condition, the will of the heavens and the God of the heavens has moved redemptively upon us and through us by the grace of Christ. I love how the message puts this across, and it says you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rope. Have you ever been at the end of your rope? Have you ever been at the end? Have you ever been thinking, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I don't know if I can just continue doing this. I don't know if I can continue to put a brave face on this. I don't know if I can go and show my face. I don't know if I can keep up this pretense. I don't know if I can get by from day to day. I don't know if I can get out of bed in the morning because things are just so hard. I don't know if I can do this anymore. Then that's you at the end of your rope. And when you're at the end of your rope, that is the time when you need to say, okay, God, I need you. So when it says, blessed are the poor in spirit, it literally means this: blessed are those who recognize their need for God. And we've been talking about emotions, and we know what emotions can do. They're strange things. You can be laughing hysterically one minute, then you can be bawling your eyes out and sobbing the next. You're declaring how much you love somebody, and then you're passionately spouting your hate for something else. Do you know, that is what emotions can do. It's almost like a bipolar thing. You can go from one extreme to the other very, very quickly. But when you're at the end of your rope, what do you do? Surrender to God. How much of your life have you surrendered? I asked asked some people this before. They were really honest. One of them said about 80% plus. I thought, wow, that's really good. And the other one was really, really honest and said about 30%. And I nearly fell off my bench. But I thought, that's great honesty. I'd rather honesty than falseness. How much have you surrendered? Are you at the end of your rope? And sometimes when you're at the end of your rope, you think, I can do this myself. No one else is going to help me. That's the first wrong. Other people want to help you. That's why we're a church. That's why we're a body. We're a body ministry. And if you have an issue, grab somebody you trust and say, look, this is what I'm going through. I don't know if I can do this anymore. Is there any way you can help me here? And that's what we do. When you're at the end of your rope, maybe before that, you've already cried out to God and said, oh God, help! And so many times I've heard that that's probably the best prayer. Because when he knows you're at the end of your rope, he sees that and he's thinking, ah, of course I'm going to help you. I am your Lord, I am your God, I am your Saviour. How much are you surrendering? And that's at the time, more than any other, when you're at the end of your rope, at the end of your tether, you don't know what else to do, that you need to surrender the whole lot. Because you have shown that you cannot do it anymore. And sometimes that's a really, really harsh reality. But if you can't do it anymore, then stop trying and saying, God, I can't do this. Can you do it? I've stuffed this for so long. I'm giving you control. If you can do better, you can have the whole lot for the whole rest of my life. And see how that works out. Makes me think of, do you remember that song years ago? It was a wee guy from Northern Ireland that sang it, and they were called D-Room, and it sang in it, the chorus says, things can only get better. You need to hear that song in your head right now. If you're at the end of your rope, surrender your life to him, surrender everything to Jesus, and then things can only get better. And that's the truth. That's where we need to be. So when it says, blessed are the poor in spirit, Jesus is specifically speaking about people who are more like the Pharisees. Because they were proud and self-sufficient. That's not who he was talking about. Can you imagine being a Pharisee and you're sitting and the crowds are here, you're part of the crowds, Jesus got his disciples and everybody's mingled, and then he turns and he says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And the Pharisees will be like, what? The poor in spirit? What about us? And that's what Jesus is getting at. It's not about everybody who thinks they've got it together, because they thought they did. They thought they knew it. And you get people like that in church all the time. People who think they've got it together. Well, at the end of days, I know where I'll be going. But that's arrogant. Because our salvation is something that we're working out for the rest of our days. And Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who recognize their need for God. Do you recognize your need for God? Do you recognize that you can't do it yourself? Do you recognize that without him being involved in what's going on in your life, it's going to go pear-shaped? Doesn't make it look good on the outside. You might have some nice shiny things. You've got a dull and mat heart. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. I love that. So, as we finish up, we looked at what being poor in spirit isn't, So let's look at what being poor in spirit truly means. Does it mean considering all property belongs to God? Yeah. We are called to always keep ourselves in perspective of God, acknowledging and thanking Him as the source of all good things. Everything you've got is because of Him. He gave you everything you've got, and you need to steward it wisely. He doesn't ask for it all back. He could, but He loves you, so He doesn't. And then all He usually does ask for is part of that. In the Old Testament, it's called a tithe. And in the New Testament, Jesus doesn't specifically say tithing, but He talks about giving. And you give of what you've got back to Him. The Old Testament talks about the first fruits, but He's the source of all good things. It's His. He blessed you with it. He gave you it. And so therefore what you need to do is you need to honour Him and give some of that back. Just because you're saying, you know what, Lord, thank you so much for what we have, rather than complaining about what you don't have. Does it mean being good stewards of that which we have been entrusted? Yes. We just said that. We're called to take care of what we've been given, not only for our benefit, but for others as well. Does it mean having a spirit of thankfulness towards God? Absolutely. We're called to be thankful people. And when we put Him first, we're going to be thankful for what we've got. You know, we looked at that last week about, you know, turning it on its head from what Habakkuk, when he changed his perspective, that even though there are no olives in the press, there are no grapes on the vine, there are no sheep in the pen, no cattle in the stalls, still I will praise you, Lord. That's the attitude. That's the attitude. Where everything is about Him. So it's about being poor in spirit, recognising your need for God, recognising your dependence on God, and recognising that what you have is down to Him. Does it mean being detached from the things we own? Yes. We should never let that which we own control us or consume us in the endless pursuit of possessions. Sometimes when we go through that whole emotional mess and we'll hear people saying, I'm just going for some retail therapy. How long does it make you feel better? Maybe the next day you're like, my bank balance is a bit less now, or the credit card bill comes through at the end of the month. Look, it felt good at the time. You're not even back for Belfast yet, because unlikely you're going to get the really fancy things you like here. But you went to Belfast, you've bought some new shiny stuff, you get home, and you've already thought, oh. And the joy's wore off, because the reality has kicked in. Don't let pursuit of possessions or things consume us. Does it mean denying ourselves at times? Yes, it does. We need to consider not ourselves but others and our decisions, and at times sacrificing something we want to help another. Is that easy? Really, really isn't. We don't always want to do that. But sometimes that's what we're called to do. Does it mean respecting those who serve us? Yes. When people serve us, we should not consider them less than ourselves, putting them down in our thoughts, actions or words. But we're called, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you want people to be nice to you and to do nice things to you, because we do. But can we, and this is no karma, but if you're nice to other people, by the law of averages, they will be nice to you. But do unto other people what you want them to do to you. That's how we need to see it. Does it mean respecting everyone around us regardless of their circumstances in life? Yes. Everybody is deserving of respect as a human being, no matter what. No matter how they look, where they live, what they have or don't have, any of that stuff. Everybody is deserving and worthy of respect, whether they're poor or rich, whether they have power or no, whether they have exceptional skills or not. And I remember being in a place one time, we were in China, Charlene's dad and I, and it got to about 10:30 at night. And we were on this really main road in Shanghai, and you could think of every neon light you've ever seen, multiply it by 100, it was like that. And it was great, we were loving it, the food's great. Then you start to get these vendors at that time of night coming out in the street, and they're selling like chicken, and then they're selling other strange things like, you know, they're cooking it on a skewer, and it's seahorse and stuff, which we didn't have. And so they're cooking the stuff at the side of the street. And then the normal shopping people start to kind of drift away, but then other people start coming in. I can only put it like, certain types of people, as if it was no time for them to come out to play. And I remember this night we were walking down the street, and this man came out, and at this stage I had read about elephantitis, I'd seen it on TV or on things on the internet and stuff, and this man came out, and it's the only thing I can use to describe, but his bottom lip must have been this size. It was massive. And I thought, what a shame. That would be hard to live with. And he had crutches. And so he came walking down the street, and we kind of looked over and we thought, that is such a shame. And this big crowd of people just started to gather around him. And when I talk about a big crowd, there must have at this stage initially been somewhere between 75 and 100 people around him. And they were just all crowding around him. And they were starting to get quite loud. And some of them were starting to get quite vocal. And I thought, what is going on? Here the next thing, police come on a motorbike and they flash the lights and they play the wee siren thing, and then the whole crowd stops because they were kind of moving as this man moved, and they stopped. And I thought, and I said to Sharon's dad, brilliant, they're going to get rid of that crowd because they're terrorising that man. And I could never have been more wrong in all my life. The police, right through the whole crowd, went straight to the man and told the man to get off the street, told the man to move, told the man to get out of sight. And that was very much the culture at that time when we were there. I was devastated, absolutely devastated, because of how that man looked. That's how he was treated. We're not to treat anybody like that. The last thing we would want is for anybody to treat us like that. So let's start to treat other people the way we want to be treated. I know sometimes it can be hard. Sometimes it can be challenging. Sometimes you've got some stuff going on in your life that makes you see things differently for a day or two or a week or whatever. But bear in mind that there could be a time where you, and then just think about the time where you have judged them. And then we end up getting judged and we don't like it. Have you ever been judged? It's no nice, is it? And the last thing you want is to make other people feel like that. We need to respect everybody around us. Poor in spirit means acknowledging God's ownership of everything, and that we're responsible to be good stewards of those things with which we've been blessed. Our attitude should be one of faithful servants and not one of pride, envy, lust, gluttony. We are called to use what we have and are given to provide for ourselves and serve God's people. Whatever emotional stuff you're going through, just remember, blessed are those who recognise their needs for God. Or think of it when the times when you're at the end of your rope. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God in His rule. I need more of God in His rule in my life. I have been at the end of my rope. When I was 19, I was literally at the end of my rope. Things were not going well. I had had some quite severe beatings that year. It wasn't a great year. And I remember thinking, things have got to be better than this. It surely can't be like this for life. And some people had started telling us about Jesus. And in the November of 1989, I realised somebody gave me the opportunity to surrender my life to Jesus. And I thought, well, I've done a really, really rubbish job up to this point. God, if you can do a better job, I'm going to let you do that. And then it was about a year and a half later, we were in London, and this just shows you the attitude of me at the time. 20 years old, and Steve Nicholson came up to us, really well-known pastor from Chicago, and he said he remembered us from when he'd been in Glasgow, and he just looked at the crowd of us, and he says, I love the poor. I had no idea what he was talking about, and I was cross. I thought he was judging us. I thought he was looking at us and looking down on us because we were poor, but he had a big smile on his face. I thought he was being patronising. And it was only 2.5 years later that I fully grasped what it was that he meant. He saw in us what we didn't even see in ourselves. That at that time, we had nothing else. We were at the end of our rope. We recognised our need for God. We just didn't understand all this stuff. But He did. What a blessing He spoke over us that day. And I took it as something completely different. And so, if you start to think of yourself as poor in spirit, put it like this. That is a compliment. Nobody is putting you down. You're not putting yourself down. But maybe it's time to start being honest with ourselves. Are you poor in spirit? And if you're not, maybe it's time